The Fan on Demand. Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Good evening, I'm John Molinaro, and you're listening to Soccer Central Radio on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and watching on Sportsnet World. Toronto FC's injury woes continue as Jermaine Defoe is ruled out for Saturday's road game against FC Dallas. But the news isn't all bad, as Jonathan Osorio is fit again, and Michael Bradley could see action in Texas. We'll examine TFC's injury situation and preview Saturday's game in Dallas, as well as talk about MLS plans to expand to Atlanta. All that and much more tonight on Soccer Central Radio. Thanks for joining us. Glad to have Alex Xero in the co-host chair.
What's up, John?
Good. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm really good.
Good.
So, last week.
Yes.
A big test. I mean, last Thursday we talked about how last Saturday's home game against Colorado would be a big test again for the Reds because they would be missing not only Jermaine Defoe, but also Michael Bradley, a key cog, as well as Jonathan Osorio and Danielle Henry. Reds lost 1-0. Edson Buttle, former TFC star, scoring, of course.
Yeah.
Your overall impression of the game and how things played out for TFC?
Well, I watched the game again this morning, and even though they lost, they kind of exceeded expectations for me. I didn't think it was much of a game, to be honest.
I think very dire.
Certain pockets. I thought TFC started the game quite well, actually. The first 15 minutes, they were moving it around, and they had about a 10 to 15 minute spurt in the second half. And then after Buttle scored the goal, I thought, you know, Becker hit the post again. So I thought defensively, again, it was another solid performance. I thought, you know, trying to push the ball from the midfield to both Gilberto and Di Rosario, I thought there was a little bit of, I don't know if struggle is the right word, but I just thought there wasn't enough service to those two guys. I actually thought Colorado did a good job of shutting down the midfield, kind of forced TFC out wide. But again, I mean, it's all things considered, losing those four guys. I mean, I think a draw might have been a fair result. But I didn't come away with it as negatively as I think some people did. I thought they did okay, considering they were missing four pretty big pieces to their team. They played better than I thought they would. And here they are, you know, five games in, they're still sitting second in the Eastern Conference. So looks like, as you said, they might get some pieces back this weekend. They'll need them against FC Dallas. But I thought, even though they lost, I thought they actually did all right. I wasn't as down on the team as I think some people were.
Well, in Colorado, I mean, aside from Buttle's goal, I struggle to think if they even had a quality chance other than that.
And that's why, I mean, that's why I was saying I thought TFC defensively were extremely sound. Bradley Orr had another big game. I thought alongside Steven, he played well. And yeah, Julio Cesar had, I don't know technically how many saves he made, but, you know, again, watching it this morning, he wasn't busy at all. It was just kind of, you know, the Buttle goal was, I don't know if there's anyone you can really blame on it. I mean, I guess maybe Bloom, you would like to see him a little further back as the cross comes in. Like, you know, you'd probably like to see things a little bit differently, but goals like that happen. But defensively, again, they were sound. So it was, I think we've talked about depth and what type of depth Ryan would have this season. And I think early on in a couple of these games, looking at Columbus, looking at last week against Colorado, my assumption is they have a little more depth than I thought they would. And it is still early in the season, but at least that's a good sign, because we know it's not just an 11 you need to win this whole thing. You're going to need guys 12 through 18, like Ryan's talked about. So I think that's the good sign. I thought Becker played well. And again, up front, Gilberto had his chances. D-Ro had a couple of good chances that he couldn't put away. But I thought they played all right, all things considered. I really did.
Well, as you said, I mean, considering they were missing a lot of starters.
Yep.
I thought, you know, they were pretty organized for most of the match. Certainly on the offensive side, on the attacking side of the ball, created very little. I mean, Gilberto had that good chance in the first half, but... And Becker kind of came close late in the game with, you know, hitting the crossbar. But other than that, I mean, it was kind of a meh game. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's why I think this weekend should be a little bit different. If Bradley doesn't play and Jonathan Osorio does play, we know he offers that offensive quality going forward that I think can kind of help Gilberto and Dwayne if he does start again. You know, Gilberto still hasn't scored. I still kind of like a lot of aspects of his game. I think I like the physicalness that he brings. I think he's pretty good in the air, but we're still kind of waiting to see him come through and bust that first goal in. And even, you know, today I spent some time just kind of looking at how he scored his goals in Brazil, and he did score them in many different ways. So I think it's good to come. I think TFC have a good player here. But, yeah, I think the good news is at least if they get one of Bradley or Osorio back, you know, there should be a little more creativity in their game against FC Dallas, a place where I don't think they've won there ever, right? I think that's the stat. I don't know if they've won.
I think it's once. I'd have to look it up.
But that's what they were lacking, was that creativity kind of going forward.
No doubt. As we said off the top, TFC travels to Texas where they'll play FC Dallas on Saturday. You can watch the game live on Sportsnet 1 at 8:30 Eastern. Sportsnet commentator Paul Dolan will be in the broadcast booth on Saturday night providing color commentary and is kind enough to join us now on the phone to preview the game. Paul, how's it going?
Good, fellas. How are you doing?
Yeah, really good. So the last two games, TFC have been missing a lot of key players, a lot of key starters, including Defoe, Bradley, Osorio, Daniil Henry. From your perspective, how has the team performed with all these absences? What have you made of the depth of this roster? Because it's surely been tested over the last two games.
Yeah, it has been. And if you asked me ahead of the Columbus game, I would have been somewhat skeptical about their ability to pull through in that game. But I think they really surprised Columbus, especially away from home. And especially down so many men, Defoe the big name. Of course, Bradley had played midweek at that point as well. But it was his energy, I think, that kind of led the rest of the ship. And I think the other players really responded and lifted their games. And I think that they caught Columbus off guard. And I think if they can do that against Dallas, rather than just sit back, soak up, and try to counter, but try to possess the ball themselves and try to dictate the pace of the game if, again, Bradley's playing, because I think that's a big if, but right. I think, you know, he's integral to that energy on the park. But I thought they were great against Columbus and not as good against Colorado, but I wouldn't necessarily put that down to a lack of depth. It was just kind of a game that was always in a quagmire and real kind of a game where two teams were not really stringing passes together, but it was going to be who could find a ball that bounced their way, and that's eventually what happened with Colorado.
I was at practice today, and Ryan Nelson confirmed that Jermaine Defoe is going to be out Saturday. He might be able to come back for the May 3rd home game against New England. Michael Bradley might make the trip to Texas. He's improved, and they're going to wait until Friday morning to determine whether or not he'll be on the plane. Who's the bigger loss, do you think? Because I would argue it's Bradley.
Yeah, and no disrespect to Jermaine Defoe.
No, not at all.
The first three goals of the season, and he does something that probably very, very few players in Major League Soccer can do, is this score almost on touch. You know, when he gets right. that opportunity, he's lethal, as we all know. And he has been for many years. It's not a one-off that he's just come here and happened to score three goals and maybe five or six touches. But Michael Bradley, as I said before, I think offers more to the energy level of the team, and he offers more to the belief, I think, of the rest of the team as well. And when you have him in your side, I think the team believes that they can accomplish good things. And, you know, he runs a show in midfield where games are won and lost. He's very good defensively, as we know, with that high line of pressure and that determination to win balls back. But he also keeps the team in possession really well. He makes the first good pass out of the back. He can run with the ball. He can play balls into the path of opposing or attacking players who are getting at the opposing defenses. And I think he just kind of dictates the flow of the play more than Jermaine Defoe can do in a forward position. So I would agree with you that I think he probably would be the bigger loss, and hopefully Toronto FC's, for their sake, he's able to play tomorrow or on Saturday.
Well, and if he does, Paul, it'll be interesting to see exactly how Ryan puts him out there. And I kind of look back to the Columbus game where Michael had free reign and he was kind of up in the attack quite a bit. And, you know, FC Dallas right now leading the Western Conference in points, and I think they lead the league in goals. But I think a lot of their play offensively has kind of been masked by a little bit of sketchy play on the back end, and that's why I think if Michael can play on Saturday, we saw how dangerous an offensive team TFC can be, even with no Defoe. but with Bradley pushing up quite a bit in that midfield role. So it'll be interesting to see how much of a fight TFC can give this FC Dallas team if Bradley can go.
And you're right, they are the highest scoring team in the league in Dallas, and I think that they'll want to get players forward, just like Columbus. You know,
yeah.
They've got attacking fullbacks, guys that love to join into the attack. But if they're not concerned about what Toronto can do, and if they just throw caution to the wind like Columbus kind of did, I thought, then I think Toronto can surprise them again. And maybe it won't be a surprise this time, and perhaps they'll know, having seen how well Michael Bradley played in a more attack-minded role against Mexico for the States, and as you said, Alex, there against Columbus, where really he was making so many good, dangerous runs into the box that It was Columbus who were on the back heel for the first part of that game anyway.
What'd you make of Kyle Becker, Paul? I thought he, obviously his two free kicks, both at the post, and I to me, you know, obviously a guy who hasn't had a lot of MLS experience, but he looked like someone who looked really comfortable out there in the position he was in. He was possessing the ball quite well. He was passing it around really well. You know, there's been some thought that, you know, his defensive game at this point isn't maybe where the team wants it to be. He's still really young, though. I kind of like what I saw from him on Saturday. And we, you know, John and I were kind of talking about depth of this team, and it's only five games in. But if you look at Becker and they bring in Issy, and you look at Bradley Orr and his ability to play center back, which I'm not sure anyone thought he'd be able to do. And it's only been two games, but I thought he's done quite well. I guess, A, what do you make of that? And B, what do you make of the depth so far early in the season?
Well, I'd agree, too, that Kyle Becker has probably had his two best games in a Toronto uniform this season. And that's what the coaching staff was looking for, young players to progress. Players like Daniil Henry and Ashton Morgan, who have gotten a lot of playing time over the last number of years, and now Kyle Becker, who's come in, and they want to see those players progress. Certainly Daniil Henry did in the first few games of the season from his perspective, and I think Kyle Becker took his chance well also. He doesn't provide quite the same energy, certainly, as a Michael Bradley would, but nobody, I think, in Major League Soccer can offer that. But he does the simple things well, and he's got confidence above all else. I mean, you saw him kind of shuck Gilberto to the side on the free kick late in the game when you're trailing by a goal, and you'd never expect to see that. But he had the confidence. He pulled it off almost. You know, he was inches away from scoring there. But that's the type of thing that they need. They need the players to come in and step up and take their chance when they're given it. And I think you're right that the other players, too, and Bradley Orr has done a terrific job in the center of the back. And Issy's come on and done reasonably well also. So they're going to need that to continue when you consider that their best players have been out injured. And with the World Cup coming up, my understanding is that it's possible that you might see Bradley and maybe Julio Cesar and even possibly Jermaine Defoe miss as many as six or seven games.
Well, and, you know, watching Becker last week, and I know Ryan Nelson likes his 4-4-2. I just kind of wondered if we'll ever see the day where Becker, Osorio, and Bradley are in some sort of midfield combination. I don't know if it'll ever happen, Paul, but
I think we could see it this weekend. I really do. I think you could see Jonathan Osorio underneath Gilberto with Becker and Bradley holding the midfield if they're fit to go, obviously. But
you
want to get your best players on the park, and if they're fit to go, I think that's the way you'd rather go, in my mind anyway, than having Gilberto and, I guess, Andrew Wiedemann up front. But I think they're at the point, too, where Ryan Nelson's looking at his depth, and as much as he's been happy with it so far, it's really starting to dwindle, too, because even some of those players are getting injured. And, you know, with Alvaro Rey not fit to go, and we, you know, haven't even mentioned Bright Dike, who wasn't available since the start of the season and won't be for some time, he's really got to look deep now, even to look at his reserves bench. So I think you might see that midfield you've been talking about there.
We're talking to Sportsnet commentator Paul Dolan here on Soccer Central Radio. Paul, as we said, Bradley Orr done quite well deputizing at center back, with Daniil Henry out. What's your position in terms of players who have lost the starting spot through injury? When they're fit again, do they automatically come back? I mean, you'll hear a lot of sort of pundits and coaches say a starter shouldn't lose his spot through injury, but if Bradley Orr is doing well and continues to do well, do you disrupt that?
You know, it's funny you bring that up, because if you remember in the Q&A we did, John, a couple of weeks ago, I said that you shouldn't necessarily lose your spot through injury. But as you've said there, if a player comes in and plays extremely well, as Bradley Orr has done, then you've got a decision to make in Ryan Nelson there. But I think the longer it goes, the more likely that you'd stay with the player who's in form if he's secured that spot and is doing really well. Now, Danielle Henry, as we said, I thought played extremely well, the best I've seen him play in a Toronto FC uniform.
Absolutely, yep.
The first few games of the year. And you don't want to hinder that confidence that he had, that I think, having gone to West Ham and then even at the start of the year having the confidence in himself to have played so well in the first three games. You don't want to stop that from continuing. But at the same time, if things are comfortable in front of Julio Cesar and that back four is continuing to do as good a job as they have done to date, it'll be a difficult decision for him to make to slot him back in, because that's a position, too, where you don't really necessarily want to make a change if you don't have to. And
right.
If they're a solid four right now, I tend to think that you'd probably keep it that way.
And I would argue that Orr has looked far better at center back than when he's played at right back for Toronto
yeah.
FC.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree with you. And, you don't necessarily have to be overly tall in that position. He is over 6 feet tall, and he's comfortable in the air. But he's aggressive, and his communication is so good. And those are key assets to have in the center of the back. And if you got Caldwell and Orr kind of putting things together for you out of the back in terms of organization, then I think you're in very good stead there. I like the fact that Danielle Henry adds a bit of athleticism, but I think that you wouldn't probably disrupt what is quite a good thing for the Toronto FC back four right now.
As a former goalkeeper, I'm interested to hear your take on Julio Cesar. How do you rate him? What are his strengths as a shot stopper, do you think?
Well, we haven't seen him have to make a ton of saves, and I'd put that down to good communication, which is such a key asset as well for a goalkeeper. I mentioned center backs, but getting communication amongst the back four and the goalkeeper, and then even defensive midfield players, for instance, making sure that everyone's on the same page is so important. And I know that there's possibly a language barrier there, but there's simple communication skills. There's simple things that everyone knows in the game of soccer. And I think that to start the season anyway, when generally you've got players coming and going as you have with injuries and new players gelling together, it's the most difficult time of the year to make sure that everyone's on the same page. And outside of the Salt Lake game, I think that they've done a reasonably good job of that. So that's probably been the biggest thing that I've been impressed by. And he's come up with big saves when need be. Again, he hasn't really been tested all that much, but he looks very comfortable, very steady, and I think more than anything else, that's what you want. You want a guy that you can rely on, that you know in behind you is going to come for the cross or make the save that he's supposed to make. And I think over time, too, he'll probably make some big saves that generally you might not expect your goalkeeper to make, and that's just gravy if that can happen.
Just a thought on FC Dallas here, Paul. We talked about a few question marks on in terms of their back four, but up front they're lethal with Castillo and Mauro Diaz and Blas Perez, who may return from an injury. We've talked about how TFC have been so defensively sound, through these first five games, kind of excluding the RSL game. But this is going to be a tough test for them. Those three specifically, even if Perez doesn't play, they have David Teixeira, a DP that they brought in the offseason, who has slowly kind of started to come into his own here. So if TFC don't keep their shape again and aren't as neat and tidy as they've been, it could very well be a long, long night in Frisco.
Yeah, and we mentioned that they're the leading scoring team in Major League Soccer, and you haven't even pointed out Michel either,
the man
in the middle that is so good from set pieces. That's something that Toronto can't afford to do either, is give away silly free kicks around the area. And they'll try to prevent corner kicks as well, because even from there, they've shown a propensity to score. So you're right. It's kind of a triple-barreled attack up front with Castillo, Diaz, even Javon Watson, not necessarily known as a goal scorer, has been getting on the score sheet this year and causing problems from a right-wing position. But I think that might play into what Toronto wants to see. They'll defend well. I'm confident of that. And if they can break on the counter, Jackson has shown very good speed this year and an ability to get forward. And I'm sure that Gilberto is going to come off the mark at some point, too. I think he could be the ace in the hole for Toronto FC. So it'll be an interesting battle in that regard as to tactically what the coaches look to do. I'm looking forward to the meeting with Ryan Nelson on Saturday morning to kind of see what he plans to do, because, as I said, I was very surprised against Columbus that he wasn't just going to sit back, soak up pressure, and try to counter. And I think he won that tactical battle against Greg Berhalter on the day. And can he do it again against Oscar Perea in Dallas?
Good stuff, Paul. We got to let you go. Thanks so much for joining us, and enjoy the warm weather down in Dallas this weekend.
Okay, it's not Cancun, but I'm sure it's a lot better than it is here in Vancouver.
Cheers, Paul.
See you, Paul.
All right, fellas.
Paul Dolan of Sportsnet going to be doing the play-by-play on Saturday's game on Sportsnet 1 at 8:30 Eastern. I tend to agree with him with regards to talking about the injury thing, about how a starter, if he's injured and he comes back but his replacement is doing well, I don't think you disrupt it. And especially, as he said, at the center back position, because when you've got a good combination there, you got to stick with it. And it's interesting because I asked Ryan Nelson this today at practice too, and he said, possession, 9/10 of the law. He says, as long as someone is like playing that well, then they're going to stay in. Now, I think I get the point about like a starter, he shouldn't lose his job, right? But I mean,
I guess it all
depends. Unless it's Michael Bradley,
right?
Then obviously I think you bring him in. But if
Paul said, have we seen Donnell play better than those first three
games?
We haven't. That's where, you know, if Mark Bloom has a rough game on Saturday, then maybe after the week, if Donnell's fine, you put him back beside Steven and you slot in Bradley. Like, I think Ryan's going to have some issues here. I would have a hard time not throwing Donnell right back in there. A young kid who's really coming into his own. You know, Bradley Orr seems to be the type of guy you can, if you need to go somewhere on the road and put him at right back or right mid, maybe you can do that if you're going to play a little more defensive. I would have a hard time not rewarding Donnell for his good start to the season. But I see where you're coming from. I mean, it's a good problem to have.
Absolutely.
It's a depth issue.
Sure.
And we all thought this team was going to have depth problems, and they still may, because again, it's quite early, but... personally, I'd like to see Donnell back there, and maybe right back would look a little bit differently, depending on how Mark does this week.
Oh, I would too. I mean, don't get me wrong. As a Canadian, I'd obviously like to see Donnell playing. But again, I think it's central defense is such a hard position. And as I said, when you've got that great combination that's clicking and working.
I hear
you. You don't fool with it. You really don't fool with it. So, and as I said, Bradley, the one game that he played at right back this season, I thought he played quite poorly, to be perfectly
right.
honest. So I think... You know, keep going with him until it doesn't work. But I don't know, we'll see. And if they do sort of put Donnell in the center, then you have to shift Bradley to the right, and what becomes a Mark Bloom, who I think has done quite well at right back. So
he's going to be in for a tough test on Saturday. Gauging the way Dallas played last week, they kind of attacked the Seattle right back with Castillo and Diaz. And if FC Dallas go down that road again, then Mark Bloom could be in for a very tough evening. So.
No, absolutely. Yeah. It should be a challenging game down in Texas. We got to go to break, but when we come back, we'll talk MLS expansion with Washington Post reporter Stephen Goff. You're listening to Soccer Central Radio on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and watching on Sportsnet World.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca.
Soccer Central Radio and Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet World. Toronto FC playing a big road game against FC Dallas on Saturday evening. You can watch it live on Sportsnet 1 at 8:30 Eastern. It's going to be a big test for the Reds, as they're going to be missing Jermaine Defoe, Danielle Henry, Dwayne Di Rosario, and possibly Michael Bradley. But they're getting Jonathan Osorio back, which is good.
Are you ready for the big game next Thursday?
What's next Thursday?
Come on.
Oh, Benfica Juventus.
Benfica Juve, man.
That's right. That's right.
How could you forget?
I'm sorry.
Leg one.
I stand corrected.
Should be fun.
I stand corrected. So, I don't know how we're going to do the show that night.
Well,
one of us is going to be angry.
Angry, yeah.
Unless it ends in a draw.
Yeah, I was going to say I'll bring my Benfica shirt in no matter what, but I think if they lose, I'm one of those fans where if they lose, I get really angry and I probably won't wear any of their paraphernalia. So,
I hear you.
But I guess first leg's I think it's in Lisbon.
I believe so.
And they play pretty well over there, so.
That could easily be the final. That really should be the final, because I think
it's
two best
bad.
Teams left in the tournament.
Yep.
It's the way it goes sometimes.
Should be fun.
With regards to TFC, someone who we haven't really talked about too much over the last couple of weeks is Dwayne Di Rosario. Picked up a leg injury in the game against Colorado and had to be subbed out, I think, around the 60th or 70th minute, something like that. He's been ruled out for Saturday's game. What's been your impression of him during his second tenure in Toronto?
I think it's been a little underwhelming, to be honest. I thought at the beginning of the game on Saturday against Colorado, I think he just kind of wasted away some possession. Some of his touches just seemed a little off. His finishing just hasn't been there, and I don't know if he's just kind of trying to round into form because it's so early in the season, or if this is just the Dwayne we're going to see. I mean, time will tell, but I think we kind of touched on it early in the season where I believe last year with DC United, Dwayne was kind of a 25 to 30 minute player, and I think when everyone's healthy on this team, that's exactly what he is. And it's a great guy off the bench if you need a goal. We've said that many times, but I think in a starting role, 60 minutes here, 70 minutes there. It's just he's kind of left me wanting a little bit. And it looked like the knock, he just kind of pulled up on the right going down for a ball. I'm not sure if he was dealing with that during the game or not. He had some chance. He had a header in the first half. He had another one in the second half that just went over the bar. He had his chances, but I think we can expect better from Dwayne, really. But I mean, in this starting 11, if everyone's there, he's a bench guy, and that's not to say he's a bad player. It's just there are better players than Dwayne right now, and he came in to kind of help the depth, and I think he will once everyone's good. But I think he's just been all right. He's kind of left me a little wanting a bit.
Who I've really been impressed with, and I don't think we've mentioned his name on the show in a couple of weeks, is Justin Morrow. I think he's been an absolute upgrade at left back, which doesn't bode well for young Canadian Ashton Morgan, because I don't think Ashton... If Justin Morrow continues to play like this, I don't see how Ashton gets another game. Maybe in the Amway Championship, but certainly not as a starter.
Yeah, there's no way Justin Morrow's losing his spot. I think he's got an assist or two. He assisted on one of the goals earlier in the year. Defensively, he's been sound, and he's shown the ability to push up and join the attack, which is something Mark Bloom has done as well. It's been nice to see TFC's fullbacks kind of go up and look quite dangerous. They can both put in quite a nice ball, and he's had a couple caps for the States, I think just one, but I was just seeing here, when they acquired him, I want to say that was the first move that TFC made. It was him, and then I think they brought in Jackson.
Yeah.
I think Morrow was the first one, and it was just allocation money that they sent to San Jose. So Bezbachenko, when the release was saying they have acquired an all-star caliber left back, and for those who have watched all the games so far, like we have, he looks like an all-star in this league.
He's
been great. Yeah. So that's a great move by Tim.
What I like about him is he's been so comfortable on the ball. Like he's very...
No nerves.
Absolutely not. I don't think he's mistouched a ball or anything like that. Just been very solid going down the left flank and, offering... his expertise on the tack. So he's been a joy to watch.
And I can't rhyme off who the left back is in San Jose right now, but I obviously wonder why they would make a move like that. I don't know if he wanted out, if he was unhappy, but a few of those kind of under the radar moves, Jermaine got a lot of play, so did Michael Bradley and Gilberto and Julio Cesar, but Jackson and Justin Morrow, those kind of the under the radar moves have worked out very nicely so
far. Mark Bloom too.
Yeah. Yeah. Did his wife retweet you last week? Did you say anything about Mark Bloom last week?
She retweeted me this morning because I wrote a feature article.
That's right. You did. I did see that.
And so she retweeted me. And then,
you guys are like pals. You're buddies.
Well, it's a good guy. Mark Bloom is, I tell you, Mark Bloom has to be one of the nicest guys I've ever been.
Really?
Oh, my God.
Didn't Ryan talk about how if he had a daughter, he would.
Well, I asked him, I said, what kind of, I was asking about Mark Bloom in terms of the player and what he offers on the field. And I said, okay, but what about in the locker room? What kind of a guy is is he a good bloke? And he said, I wish I had 20 Mark Blooms. And he said, he's the kind of guy that you wish your son turned out to be.
Yeah. So he's like me, pretty much. Wow. He's the ideal man.
No comment on that.
Oh.
Major League Soccer announced its latest expansion franchise this week when they welcomed Atlanta to the league. And they're going to begin play in 2017. The team will be owned by Arthur Blank, who also controls the NFL's Atlanta Falcons. Here to talk about the Atlanta club and MLS expansion in general is Stephen Goff, Washington Post reporter and MLS insider. Steve, how are you?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. Thanks a lot for joining us. So, not a surprise that Atlanta is welcomed into the league. Commissioner Don Garber has often talked about wanting to expand into the south, the east region of the country, of the United States. Your thoughts, though, on Atlanta getting a team. Is this a good move for MLS? Can it work in that city?
It could work. I think the the bar has been raised so high by Seattle, Portland, Toronto, Montreal, places like that, that there's going to be an expectation that this team does as well as most of the other recent expansion teams. I think there's some risk involved here, though, because Atlanta is not a particularly great pro sports market. The Braves have been a very successful team, but middle of the pack attendance wise, they lost their hockey team. The basketball team did not draw, and then you get the Falcons. So, I think there's some risk involved here. They're playing in a big new NFL retractable roof stadium on artificial turf, and we'll see. We'll see. I think the jury will be out on this team. They certainly have the money behind them, and they have the momentum of MLS's continued growth and success. So in that sense, I think they'll do well. Should we hold them to the standard of, some of these other expansion teams? That might be a little unfair, but, the expectation now with new teams in this league is pretty darn high.
Well, and I think that's a good point, especially when you look at, teams like Seattle and Vancouver and Montreal. They had relative success and did quite well early on. And Toronto, although, a disaster on the field in the early years, certainly, were the talk of the town. So I think anything less than sort of a home run here is going to not look favorably on Atlanta.
Yeah, and I don't think they don't have to, average 25,000, and they don't have to take the city by storm. There's a middle ground. Every professional league has different grades of success. The NFL has wildly successful franchises, and then they have the Jacksonville Jaguars. So there's certainly different levels, and we'll see with Atlanta. I'm still not completely convinced, but they've got a couple years now to build some momentum, sell tickets, educate the public about the league and the team. And, I think it'll be fine. But, I think there is some risk involved in some markets in the U.S., and Atlanta, would be one of them.
You know this league inside out, Stephen. You've been involved with it for quite some time now. You've seen contraction. You've seen, the league get to the point it is today. Is this happening too fast? Are they growing too fast? Would you like to see, Major League Soccer kind of settle on? I mean, are you all for the 24-team league that Don Garber wants, I guess, in 2020, in 6 years' time?
Certainly 24 has to be your maximum. I think, this is an enormous country, enormous two countries, when you include major Canadian cities in the mix. So, certainly the population is here. I mean, you compare the U.S. population combined with Canadian cities, you compare that to, France, Spain, England, Italy, Germany combined. So the population is here. Some cities will be better than others. Has MLS grown too fast? I like that they've staggered over the years. The teams come in. There hasn't been a flood of teams at once. Next year, I think Orlando, I think, will be a big success because there's an organic element there. This organization has grown with the third division side. And I think in a city where there's only one other professional team, the Magic, I think they're going to do very well. The other New York City team, I understand why they're doing it, but I think it's being poorly executed. And the fact that they're going to play at least 3 years at Yankee Stadium, and I wouldn't be surprised if that turns into 5 or 6 years, I think it's a big blemish.
As John said, there's, looking at the Southeast, and we see pockets of teams in this league now with the Northwest and Southern California here in Toronto, Montreal, and the two New York teams now. And there's been a lot of questions, obviously, on if Major League Soccer can work in the Southeast. And I think the one thing we know for sure, Stephen, is we're going to find out with Miami and Orlando and Atlanta. We're going to find out maybe in the next 5-10 years if this thing can truly work, because there are a lot of questions right now, and there's a lot of skepticism. And frankly, I understand it. I mean, it's not like the NASL team in Atlanta have been drawing well. I think they get, what, 4,000 people a game?
Yeah.
So, there's a lot of criticism here, and I totally understand it. I think it's extremely fair.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I also understand that they, you know, they want to be in more major markets, like Atlanta and Miami and another team in New York, which makes the league more appealing for the next TV contracts. It broadens your footprint. It reaches a bigger part of the audience population. So, I understand that part of it, but you gotta continue to raise the quality of the league. Each city has a responsibility to market and compete with other entertainment and sports entities. So. Yeah, I mean, I think we're at a point now where there is a little more risk involved, as opposed to the past few years where you knew Toronto was going to be a hit right away. You knew Montreal was going to work, and Vancouver, Seattle, Portland. So all those made a lot of sense. And now you're getting into markets that might be a slight more hit of risk. I don't know. We'll see. Miami, I'm a little skeptical about too. And I'm not even going to see a Miami team unless they get a stadium.
Right. We're talking to Washington Post reporter and MLS insider Stephen Goff here on Soccer Central Radio. Stephen, they're going to Orlando and New York City scheduled to begin play next season. Obviously, Atlanta is going to come into the picture. The team in Miami is going to come in a couple years. What might this mean for the playoffs? Five teams from each conference make it now. Do you get a sense that the league might sort of increase the number of playoff teams? And if they do, what's your opinion on that?
Yeah, I don't know what the format would be, but as the number of teams increase, the number of playoff teams will. They have to do that. It's another revenue flow. Owners in U.S. leagues, Canadian leagues, they love playoffs. And playoffs aren't typical of soccer around the world, but we're not in the rest of the world. We're here in a place where playoffs are the pinnacle of your season. And what the format will be, I don't know. I'm not sure what they have in mind. There's a lot of questions going forward. The conference format, the playoffs, the timing of the schedule, whether they consider the more traditional calendar, whether MLS Cup, stays in a neutral, at a higher seed. These are all things, and they're all part of the growth of the league and the team. This is the process. This is still a young league. It's not yet 20 years old, and there's going to be ups and downs along the way, and here we are.
And the good thing is that this new Atlanta team are going to play in a soccer-specific... No, they're not. No. So
yeah,
it's going to be a very Vancouver feel, I guess, Stephen. It's going to be an over billion-dollar stadium, I think, for the Falcons. It's going to be over 70,000 spectators. Apparently, they're going to be able to move in the seats to make it more, more of an attractive vibe, so to speak. But... it works in Vancouver, I will say that. It's no problem for Whitecaps games, so I guess they've looked at that model and say, okay, well, we can do that here.
No, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Like I said, not every team has to be like Seattle or Toronto or Salt Lake. They'd be strong teams and middling teams and a few weak ones, and they'll try to avoid the weak ones. That's all.
To what degree, Stephen, do you think that the league should be, instead of expansion, should they be looking at, I hate to use the word fixing, but when you look at teams like, Chivas and Columbus and Dallas, I mean, they're having problems drawing too. So should the league be focusing its sort of attention on that, on those franchises, possibly relocating them instead of adding new teams?
You know, I'm not sure. I think you can fix teams while still expanding. I don't think you have to choose there. You know, Chivas is a unique situation, and that's being addressed now. You know, other teams will have ups and downs. Columbus is a smaller market and too selected in their attendance. But you know, I don't think you have to stop expansion for the sake of addressing teams that aren't meeting your expectation and standards.
Interesting stuff. Listen, Stephen, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. And keep up the good work.
Thanks, Stephen.
Yeah, my pleasure, guys. Thanks a lot.
No problem. Stephen Goff, Washington Post reporter and longtime MLS insider. I think he, the point about the playoffs, where it's interesting because I was talking to a journalism class actually yesterday.
Yeah.
At Sheridan College. And the point was brought about, would MLS ever go the play or sort of go to the traditional route in terms of just a league table to determine the winner? Would they ever sort of introduce relegation, kind of like European and South American football? And I said no, it's never going to happen because no MLS sort of franchise perspective, like the guy for Atlanta, Arthur Blank,
yeah,
he's not going to plunk down $60 million or $70 million or whatever the expansion fee is for a franchise, with the threat that in 3 years' time he could be playing in the second division.
Right.
Yeah, no one is going to do that. So that's never going to happen. But the playoffs, I get about it. It's against sort of, you know, the normal tradition of soccer. But, you know, not everything has to be European-based, right?
Right.
Like we're in North America. The tradition is playoffs. And I like the MLS playoffs. I really do. I think it offers up a lot of drama and a lot of upsets.
And what's interesting, too, is I saw somewhere that, you know, when they get to 24 teams, that we may have three different conferences, which apparently, I didn't know this, they had before, years ago, in the early stages of Major League Soccer. So now if you have 24 teams and three conferences, what do you do then? I mean, how many you know, does the top four in each conference get through and a couple get?
Bias,
there's a couple. Yeah, there's a bunch of things they can do. But I'm with you. I don't mind the format right now. I think it's entertaining. Even looking at last year, there was a couple of teams that missed out by a point or two.
Yeah.
So it went right down to the wire, and it's a long season. It is a long, you know, from March to October. It's very long. And I kind of like the fact that those games late in the year, like TFC had that one game long time ago in New York where a win or a draw. We remember that one, right? And they got plunked 5-0. So Atlanta's going to be interesting too. Arthur Blank took over that football team and they weren't very good. This was 12 years ago. And they are now one of the more reputable franchises in the National Football League. He has deep pockets. So now we talk about DPs and, money's not going to be an issue for that franchise, which is, I'm sure, very attractive to Don Garber in giving Arthur Blank the keys to his own team.
Well, that's why, I mean, I get the idea about Atlanta not being the greatest sports city, and it certainly has that reputation.
And it's not.
And that's fair enough. But I think this is a bit different. Like, I think it's a little sort of premature to write them off, just this MLS going there because of Arthur Blank specifically, because he has done such a great job with the Falcons, because he's got pretty deep pockets, and he's come out and he's going to spend. So this isn't the same sort of management and ownership group that owned the Preds, who sold them off, and own the Falcons, the Hawks, who do a poor job, or the Braves, who can only draw what is about 30,000 or whatever it is. So this is a different animal. This is a different person involved. So that's why I have a little bit more faith that it might work.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's writing them off, but the questions that are being asked are legit. The hockey team's not there anymore. The Hawks are the third worst in attendance. The Braves are in the middle of the pack. And there's really not a great soccer history in Atlanta. Like we said, the NASL team draws 3,000 to 4,000 a game. So I think they'll be able to fit 29,000 once the stadium is reconfigured in 2017. We'll see what type of market it is. It's a huge city. I think it's the largest population in North America right now that does not have a Major League Soccer franchise. Mm. So we're seeing MLS kind of go this route. Find big cities, lots of people, doesn't have a team, and kind of hope that it will come together, like Orlando, like Atlanta. Portland, Toronto, Vancouver, Montreal, different scenarios. Seattle, different. That was different.
Yep.
There are a lot of questions, and I think they're all totally legit.
That music means we're running out of time. Before we go, I want to thank the fine people behind the glass for producing tonight's show. Brett Armstrong, Jen Rolnick, and Mark Boffo. Thanks, guys. A reminder that you can watch FC Dallas versus Toronto FC live on Sportsnet 1 at 8 p.m. Eastern on Saturday. And Alex and I will be back next Thursday with another edition of Soccer Central Radio on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet World. Until then, cheers for listening. Happy Easter. Have a good weekend. Bye.